Hey friends, it is Tim, and it is now May 1, 2020. Although I'm recording this one back to back with the one I just did, it is now it's just past midnight, and I'm still waiting for my sermon to upload. So I thought, you know, let's do another one. Let's call this one creatively God's Plan Part 3. We did two, we did one. This is part three, not to be confused with the Drake song, God's Plan, but God's Plan, part three. I've been trying to make the point that while God, our Father, has a plan, and that is clear, it's clear through Scripture that God knows what He's doing. While that's clear, for us to try to discern or to try to say things like, we know this is God's plan, We know what God's plan is in the midst of this. It's not only arrogant. I actually think it misses the point in some huge ways, at least when held to the Scriptures. And so we've talked about the story of Leah and how sometimes God says no to our plans, and actually His plan requires Him to say what feels like a no to our prayer requests or our best plan for our lives. Then we looked there first, and then we looked at the cross and specifically the prayer Jesus prays from the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? The Psalm 22 prayer. And sometimes I try to make the point that sometimes our best ideas for our lives, our prayers, actually God has a much bigger, broader, wider scope in mind, and God sees wider than we see. Sometimes God says no, but there are other times where we say the prayers. We ask God to intervene, to step in, and sometimes God says no, but sometimes what God does is God says it's a little bit slower than you thought. It's a bit slower than you realized. If you haven't had a chance, I would love for you to be able to tune into last week's sermon. So if you can't do that, let me just recap. One of my favorite passages in the entire Bible is Exodus 13, 17. Exodus 13, 17, just to put the story in scope, the Israelites have been freed from Egypt. God has set them free from Egypt. There were a series of 10 plagues. Each of them were one of the major Egyptian gods. And God essentially stands up and says, you have been held guilty. There's been a court, there's been a trial, and you're guilty. You are not worthy of worship. And the final plague is God says, I want you to kill a lamb and rub its blood on your doorpost. What's that about? Well, look up images of Pharaoh, and especially images of like the pyramids, and what you discover is the sacred animal of the Pharaoh is often depicted as a goat or a lamb. And so essentially, I think what is happening in the story is God says, I want you to take the central image of the Pharaoh, and I want you to kill it, and I want you to rub his blood on your doors, which either I'll set you free, or Pharaoh is going to kill you. So it's a bit of a gamble. It'd be like us burning the flag. I mean, this is the political symbol of the people, of the Pharaoh. Anyway, God sets the people free, and there's a road that goes from Egypt, and this road goes around the Mediterranean Sea and into Israel, what is referred to in the Scriptures as the Promised Land. The road itself is roughly 300 miles, and it's along the coast. There's access to water. It's a major trade route. At the time, it was known as Horus's Way, the god Horus. Later, it became known as the Way of the Sea, the Via Maris in the Greek, or what some refer to as the Philistine Road. The Philistines were the sea people. All that to say, there was a road that went from Egypt all the way to Israel. It was 300 miles long. They could have taken the road. Even if they walked slowly, the Israelite people could have moved, if they just moved a mile a day. And they could move faster than a mile, but let's just assume they move a mile a day. Taking the Philistine road, it would have taken them less than a year to get to the Promised Land. So, why does it take 40 years? What's the deal? Well, Exodus 13, 17 says that that when God set the Israelite people free, he did not take them down the Philistine road, though that was shorter. For God knew that if they were to face war, and they certainly would have, they would turn back and head back to Egypt. So instead, God leads his people through the desert. Sometimes the path is slower than we wished. Why does this verse matter to me? This passage, alongside of a passage out of the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy 8, 2 through 10, were given to me by a friend in a season of unbelievable, fear, stress. When I was in my mid-20s, I was in a pretty serious relationship that ended. And I spent my 20s single, and all my friends were getting married. There was one summer where I stood in 8 weddings, which is 8 tuxedo rentals. It's expensive when you're in your 20s. But I stood in 8 weddings of my friends, and it was a season where my friends were getting married. And there was just a season in my 20s where I remember thinking, like, is this going to happen for me? Am I going to be single for the rest of my life? I remember sitting down with a friend and saying, I think this is just the way it's going to go. Like, I think I'm going to be single. And I'm trying to come to peace with that, even though there was like an ache in me for companionship. I think it's an ache that goes all the way back to the beginning of the scriptures where Adam aches for a partner. But I felt that ache, and yet it had felt as though maybe this isn't going to happen. And this verse came to me in that season, this idea that, hey, trust God. Sometimes the road is longer than you think. Sometimes the short road isn't the best road. Sometimes you say your prayer and God doesn't say yes immediately. Sometimes the answer is slower. All that brings me to Jeremiah chapter 29, the most quoted verse when it comes to God's plan, I would argue, in the entire Bible. Jeremiah 29, 11. You've heard these words. These are the words, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." You heard this verse? These words mean a tremendous amount to so many people. And so I want to say this really graciously, because these words mean so much. I have a friend who had cancer and ended up getting these words as a tattoo, because this was the verse that carried him through that season. Yeah, these words are tremendously powerful. This idea that God has a plan when we do not see a future, God sees a future for us. This is really important that we understand. And I think that this verse is one of the most misunderstood and perhaps misquoted verses in the entire scriptures. Because while it is true that God has a plan for our life, plans to prosper us and not to harm us, plans to give us hope in a future, while that's true, we often, let's be honest, most of you listening are more than likely Americans, and Americans, we want the thing tomorrow. Like, I don't want to wait 6 days for my package. I want it in 2 days. I'll pay the money so that Amazon gets me my package in 2 days. We went to Disney World, and Disney World is this giant game of how long do I have to wait in line? And we'll get the fast pass, thank you very much. And we will do our best to play the system so that we can stand in line the least amount of times. Thank you very much. Yeah, let's just be honest. That makes sense. That makes sense. And that's how we're wired. We want the fast pass. And so when we hear God has a plan, a beautiful plan for our life, we often come across these words when we're in a hard season of life, and we need to be reminded that God has a plan. But then when a week goes by, or 6 weeks, or a year goes by, and we don't see the plan coming like the way we thought it should come, we start asking questions like, is God real? Should I trust him? Is he good? And if it keeps going, if the season of desert continues long enough, we often find ourselves throwing our hands in the air and saying, I don't think I can follow this God at all. Like, I can't, like, I cried out to him. I prayed. He doesn't love me. He doesn't care. He doesn't answer my prayers. Okay. Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. If you zoom out just a bit, in fact, if you zoom out and just read the verse before it, okay, before we read it, the verse before it, let me give you the context of the whole passage. Jeremiah is a prophet. A prophet is somebody who speaks truth to power. Don't think person who predicts the future, that's not a biblical prophet. A biblical prophet is somebody who sees what's going on and speaks truth into the system of the day. Now, Jeremiah is writing a group of people who have been a nation known as Babylon, an empire known as Babylon has come in, and because the people have they've all kind of gone their own way and done their own thing. God allows the nation of Babylon to ransack the city. The city of Jerusalem is destroyed. There's first a ground siege around the city, and then they come in, they destroy the temple. They drag away all of, at first it's just the military people, the leaders, and then it's the religious people. And eventually, it's almost the entire nation gets dragged away in chains to Babylon, a land that is not theirs. And Jeremiah writes to these people. And at first, he's warning them that this is going to happen. And then on the other side of it, he's reminding them that though they are in Babylon, God has not forgotten them. And so it's in this context that he says these words, Jeremiah 29, verse 10. This is what the Lord says. When 70 years, by the way, 70 years is the biblical number for the average lifespan. So when you hear 70 years, think when your life, so when the 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my good promise to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Do you see how this verse is potentially misquoted? Yeah, God says, I have a plan for you, but you may not see it in your lifetime. Yeah, I have a plan for you. It's a good plan, but your kids will see it. But it may take 70 years. It may be a bit slower. This is a lesson in trust that I have been not wanting to learn. This is a lesson in trust that is hard. This is a lesson in trust that I want to understand intellectually, but I don't want to experience. This idea that we can cry out and that God hears our prayers and God restores our dreams, and yet it may happen in a way and at a speed we are just not comfortable with. So let me ask you, what are the things you're praying for? What are the things you've been praying for a while and you haven't seen them come to fruition? Can you trust that God is still good? Can you trust that God has not abandoned you nor forsaken you, even if you haven't seen exactly how things are going to work out? Can you trust this God? That's Jeremiah's question. That's my question. Yeah, we'll pick up. I got a couple more I want to share with you, but we'll pick up there later. Sometimes God says no, but sometimes God says it's just going to be a bit slower. All right, friends. I hope you have an incredible day, and we will talk to you later.